IMG College, live from Bailiwick, inside the Orleans Hotel and Casino. Welcome to the Runnin' Rebels Basketball Coaches Show, brought to you by Chevron. It's proven, no gasoline gets better mileage than Chevron with Techron. Care for your car. And by State Farm. Go with the one that's here to help life go right. Talk to an agent today at 800-STATE-FARM. Now, here are your hosts, John Sandler and Curtis Terry.
Welcome once again to Bailiwick inside the Orleans Hotel and Casino, the head coach show, the TJ Otzelberger show. Runnin' Rebel basketball is the subject for the next hour as the Runnin' Rebels in the midst of a really tough stretch in Mountain West Conference play with a road game coming up at Colorado State. It's the bye week this week, so no game yesterday or Tuesday, but the Runnin' Rebels certainly working hard, getting back to school, and getting ready for the Rams' first meeting of the year between those two teams on Saturday afternoon up in Fort Fun, up in Fort Collins, a 2 o'clock Mountain Time tip. That's what they call it. 1 o'clock Las Vegas time, and Curtis and I have all the action for you starting at 12:30 Las Vegas time with Runnin' Rebel warm-up. Hi, everybody. I'm John Sandler, along with Curtis Terry, head coach T.J. Otzelberger with you. Rebels coming off a tremendous effort against a very, very good San Diego State team. I don't know if you got a chance to see what they did to New Mexico last night, but that's illegal in a number of states. Could have done whatever they wanted in that game. That has something to do with New Mexico, but a lot to do with how good the Aztecs are. And I think the fans, Curtis, I know going around town after Saturday's game, whether it was immediately after or in the next few days, the general sentiment I got from folks was, wow, I was really impressed. I was really impressed with the effort. I was impressed with the talent, and I really liked the direction of the program.
Yeah, that's all I heard. And still hearing it. Obviously, we didn't get the outcome that we wanted. But, I mean, aside from that great crowd, I've heard that a number of times.
That was fantastic.
That was a great crowd in there, brought a lot of energy. The guys played hard, and that's what a lot of people that I've ran into over the course of the last 4.5 days since then, that everybody just they kept barking at was, man, great effort. The guys play so hard. They left it out there on the floor. Just came up a little bit short.
Yeah.
And me personally, as an alum, I can live with that. Obviously, want to beat the brakes off the Aztecs when we go down there next month. But still, I mean, that's what it's about, and people are appreciating that, and that's all credit to Coach TJ and his staff, as well as the players.
Let's bring him in, Coach TJ, as he sits here with us on his show. Coach, I would imagine you're hearing some of the similar things. I know it doesn't quite mean as much to you because you want to win every game, but are you getting that sense? Are you hearing those feelings and those sort of expressions of support in the community?
Well, first of all, we're very grateful and thankful for that awesome crowd we had and the energy in the building. That gives us a chance to play at an even higher level. It gives us a chance and an opportunity for our guys in those moments when maybe things aren't going as well to kind of give us a little extra kickstart. And then in those times where it is, really to push forward and try to put our foot on the gas. So really thankful to our fans. As far as, you know, our program and how things have been going and how things specifically went on Sunday, we feel that, you know, you're going to play to the level of your habits. We are trying to build championship-level habits before we're even a championship-level team. And to have those habits means you have to embrace work. You have to embrace the day-to-day, come in and bring in a lunch pail and give it everything you have. And then if those are your habits, those will come out in the game. I'm pretty confident our guys played hard. They played with some purpose. At the same time, we want to win every game. There's no moral victories. There's no coming close. We were stuck on 45 there for a while and just really need to find ways to keep the pace and flow on offense and scoring some of those key moments. That's something we're working on along with other things, and we're going to continue to improve and move the bar and the standard of this program forward.
Did that game on Sunday with that terrific crowd, and by far the best crowd we've had this year, and hopefully we'll see at least things approaching that as the season continues. San Diego State obviously is a marquee opponent. A lot of folks have that game circled on their calendar when the schedule comes out. But does that give you and your staff, with the exception of Kevin because he's lived it, a clear indication of what's possible here in terms of the level of excitement and interest and the atmosphere in the building?
It does. We see the progress with our crowds, the energy, the enthusiasm they've continued to pick up, which says that there's people that are appreciating how hard our guys are playing, and they're continuing to support the program. And then hopefully they're telling one friend who's telling another friend, and gradually we're going to continue to grow that. And our guys are fighting hard. We need to keep improving, but we appreciate the fans that are coming, and I think we grow this thing together. As everyone comes out and supports us, our habits, like I said earlier about a championship-level program, this program has had a tremendous home court advantage, tremendous fans, a rich history, many that have come before us, and I think the best way we can celebrate that is all come together and get this thing back where we want it to be.
That sounds exactly right, and I think it's headed in that direction. We can say that all we want, Curtis, but we are seeing and we are hearing and we are feeling the fans begin to understand that.
Yeah, I mean, when you say you think it's going to head in that direction, it is heading that direction. I think that's what's going to become the norm, and obviously the expectation. And it starts obviously with coaching, with the players. But it's fun, right? I mean, I don't know how many times I was sitting there, and John's like, you got to sit down. I'm like, no, John, I can't. I almost want to get like a high stool and just like lean over. But again, it's the atmosphere. It's everybody's involved in that. And I think that's really what motivates people, but also wanting to win. I mean, I was at a local high school today, and I walked in and the coach says, man, those boys are playing hard, aren't they? I was like, you betcha. But everybody appreciates that. And not that they ever weren't, but I think it's just a matter of that consistency of what people expect. And Rome wasn't built in a day, right? I mean, it's not going to be something that people flip the switch, but you got to lay that foundation. Like I've said a number of times, that foundation is being laid, and now it's time to start, kind of piecing it brick by brick, building this thing up. But we're heading in the right direction. I'm so impatient. I just can't wait. But I know I'm not the only one, but we're heading there.
All right, Coach. It is the midway point in the season right now. Rebels are 9 games into conference play at 6-3. And a repeat of that would be terrific. Obviously, you're hoping to improve on that record going forward. But it is an opportunity maybe for us to take some time tonight and kind of let you give an assessment, your thoughts about where things are. I know you don't like to look too far down the road. Maybe a chance to look back and see where you've come from. And let's start with the statement you made in terms of you play how you practice, you put in the work in practice, which will translate to hard work in the games. Are there certain guys that you think have sort of adopted and just internalized that sentiment, and we've seen the improvement on the floor during the year?
What you've seen from some is guys that we weren't playing at all early in the year for one reason or another have stayed the course, worked hard every day, were ready for their opportunity, and when their name was called, they stepped up and they did a great job. Marvin Coleman is as glaring of it as an example of that as anybody. As a life lesson, you never know when that opportunity will present itself, but in life, be ready for when your number's called, and Marvin certainly was. Guys like Jay Green getting minutes now, he had, some impactful minutes. He's brought some energy to our team at points in time that's really been helpful. Bryce Hamilton's gone from a reasonable, inconsistent reserve to a marquee elite scorer, and a guy who's a force on the glass and who's a much improved defender. And so you're seeing all these guys individually do these things that are elevating our team. Nick Blair has become a guy we can count on every night to start and to give us great energy. And so across the board, I think you're seeing some of those examples of guys that maybe weren't playing quite as much early that are really earned that opportunity. You mentioned our program and how we move forward. We want everybody in our program to earn everything that they get and to fight for it each and every day. And I think it means so much more to somebody when they knew that they had to fight for it and they had to earn it and they had to work for it. And then when they get that chance, they know how important it is to not give it up. So we're going to continue to, give opportunities to guys that show the effort and energy on the practice court. We've got Eli Long back now as well. I thought his minutes were really positive for us on Sunday, and so we've got more options, we've got more depth, and everybody's got to stay ready because all those guys are going to get opportunities.
Has there been, the hard work translating to the floor, the guys earning the minutes, that, and for example, Bryce, that doesn't all happen in unison. That doesn't all happen with all 12 guys or all 10 guys or however many are being considered at once. Have there been one or two examples of guys who have taken that step and other guys have sort of noticed and said, wait a minute, that kind of worked out for him. He worked really hard and now he's getting minutes and now he's making contributions. I think I need to adopt that philosophy instead of whatever it was I was doing before.
Well, the challenge even with Marvin Coleman is when we got close to giving him a chance at game minutes, he's the guy that I coach the hardest every single day. He's the guy that I'm on the most. He's the guy that when something doesn't go right for the group, I treat him as he's the coach on the floor. And so I think, you know, there's a lot of times where guys look at it and say, man, Marvin is you know, he's taken the brunt of coaches' tirades and things in practice, and now they see it. So I think it makes it more – I think it makes our guys more coachable because they see Marvin dealing with it. And I remember when I told him when I was first going to put him in the game, and I said, right now we have an issue. We turn the ball over way too much. If you turn it over for any reason – now, as a coach, you're taught all these wordsmith things when you don't want your team to turn over. It's ball toughness and ball security and play with confidence and, you know, protect the ball, whatever you want to say. But what you're really saying, and so what I appreciate about Marvin is just cutting right through and saying, Marvin, if you turn it over for any reason whatsoever, you're coming immediately out of the game. I don't care why. And so there's been times even in practice where he turns it over, he just runs right out because he knows. So it makes it a little easier to coach the other guys when you have a guy that's so coachable like Marvin.
I'm just envisioning that in a game. You know, Marvin, you know, accidentally drags his pivot foot or loses control of the ball, and he just heads off the floor, and coach then has to pick someone up to come in the game. I could actually see it happening. But you know, we've talked so much this year about building culture. And I think what we're talking about now is one of the prime examples of how that works. And whether it's your discussions and your treatment and the impact of your work with Marvin and what it's had or any other thing that's gone on in practice and as part of building habits, other guys being pushed, pulled, or whatevered along to progress. And I think we're beginning to see the beginning of that culture with a guy like Bryce Hamilton just exploding onto the scene with guys becoming more reliable and more productive for you in game situations in addition to being, you know, on and off the floor.
Well, we need guys like Marvin Coleman and Bryce Hamilton a year from now to be the guys when that talented group of freshmen come in.
Right.
We need Marvin and Bryce to put their arm around those guys and say, look, he's being hard on you now. He was hard on me last year, and I stayed with him. I didn't pout. I wasn't frustrated. I didn't get in my feelings. I didn't pack it in. I kept working. I kept fighting, and eventually my opportunity came, and when it did, I was so ready for it because of the standard coach held me to, because of the accountability. And so now what happens as a coach, you have your players coaching your players, which allows you to really be successful. And we take a lot of pride in recruiting, identifying guys with great character who love basketball and who are willing to work. We don't make promises and tell people they're going to come in here and we're going to just give them the ball and let them shoot it every time. And so more than anything, we want guys to understand this is a program built on work habits. And if you work and you do that every single day, that your opportunity will come and then make the most of it.
And if you, for those of you listening out there who've listened occasionally throughout the season, you've heard us talk about building a culture and having it grow and build from within. That's exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah, it has to happen organically. I mean, you can't really come in and try to force people to do something. I mean, true to the name, rebels, right? If you try to force something on me, at least I'm going to push back just by human nature. It's definitely got to be ownership taken by the guys, and it's passed down from coach, like I said, to Marvin, and Marvin kind of delivers that message as he sees fit for each guy individually, but they've got to take ownership in that. And to your question earlier, John, I think it just everybody has a different learning curve, and some guys, you know what I mean, they pick it up quickly and they just run with it. Other guys maybe need to see it a couple times, do it a couple times to figure it out, and I think a great example of that is Bryce. I mean, he's kind of started slow and showed some peaks, but then it started to click for him, and he's starting to put together, I mean, just great halves and games, and it's really starting to roll. But you have to have that just organic want to make it happen, because they can't do it because coach wants them to do it. They've got to do it because they want to do it. That's when you really start to see gas getting thrown on it and things starting to burn, at least from my experiences.
Well, and even with Bryce, if you recall, when we played Pacific, which is probably the game, one of the games I'm the least proud of, Bryce played all of 6 minutes. And so Bryce had was put in a spot where he could say, did I play 6 minutes because coach doesn't love me, believe in me, and think I have potential to be great? Is this a personal attack? Is he using me as an example? And I remember even talking to Bryce's mom after and saying, if you're with us, all that Bryce needs to hear is do what your coach is saying. This is all going to be just fine. And when you have that, you know, that support around a young person, it would have been easy for people in his support network to say, well, coach isn't treating you fair. Coach isn't being right to you. He's holding this against you. He's signaling you out. No, I'm not. It's the same standard and the same rules for everybody on the team. Bryce made the choice after that game that he was going to change how he approached practice, his level of focus and intensity. And Bryce has achieved at a very high level because Bryce made that choice to fight through some tough times.
And at the same time, if you didn't hear the postgame show the other night, or other day, after the San Diego State game, when Bryce had 29-10 in the game, and we singled him out on the postgame show, coach's comments were, yeah, he was terrific, but he can be so much better, and we expect so much more from him. And I think in earlier in his career, and he's still a very young guy, but earlier in his career, that statement of, yeah, but we expect so much more of him, would have probably had a negative impact, where he would have said, wait a minute, I just had 29-10, that's not good enough. But the maturation that you're talking about, all of a sudden he's like, the hope is, and I assume he's gotten to the point where he says, yeah, you know what, you're right, I can do more, I can contribute more, whatever that reaction is.
Well, and I spent some time with Bryce today in my office and said, you know, today I thought you were very average on the practice floor. And average right now is not acceptable for you. 2 months ago, we would have taken average on a lot of days. And really, at the end of it, we were talking about this season and how things going. I said, I've seen what you can do, so I am going to continue to push you more, be on you more, challenge you more, because not only is it about, you know, his production offensively, but defensively as well. And it's funny to me in basketball, and people use the term two-way player, because last time I checked, it's not like hockey. There's no line change, and it's not like football where you have an offense and a defense. Why in the heck wouldn't you be a two-way player? And so with Bryce, I know we've got a lot of progress to make defensively, but I think he's made some strides there as well.
No doubt about it. We are going to take a break. We're going to continue with this discussion, sort of the halfway point temperature check and assessment of where the Rebel program is and the vision for the future, all of that. We'll also get into Colorado State a little bit as the Rebels' next opponent on Saturday afternoon up in Fort Collins. Take a break after this. I want to remind you that after the game or anytime, you can visit or click Finley Toyota. Finley Toyota, the largest Toyota dealer in Nevada. Ask for John Barr. He'll do anything to sell you a car. You are listening to the TJ Otzelberger Show from Bailiwick inside the Orleans Hotel Casino on the UNLV Sports Network from Learfield, IMG College. All right, we are back here at Bailiwick inside the Orleans Hotel Casino. John Sandler, Curtis Terry, head coach T.J. Otzelberger with you on the T.J. Otzelberger Show. Talking Runner Rebel basketball as the Rebels get ready for a couple of tough road games in conference at Colorado State Saturday and then at Utah State next week on Wednesday. We won't worry about the Aggies right now. We'll focus on the Rams. But we're kind of taking advantage of the fact that it is the midway point of the conference season and having Coach talk about his program, the guys, where they are, and where it's headed. And as you look at things, Coach, it is a group that you had to get to know. And you mentioned just a moment ago talking about Bryce and talking to his mom and talking about support group. Is that a critical step as you take over a program with a bunch of kids who you didn't recruit and kids you hope, like a guy like Bryce, is going to be in the program with you for a number of years, to develop that relationship not only with the player but also the folks around that player?
I'm still learning each of our players' personalities, what they respond best to, and then, like you said, with their support network and how to communicate effectively to build the foundation and the support around each young man so that the only option is for them to be successful. It's a continuous process of investing time, spending time with players individually, whether it be watching film, just eating a meal, hanging out, talking to them about a particular game plan, whatever that may be, and I think it's ongoing. For our players, our young men to play at their best, they need to know that I believe in them. They need to know I'm invested in them for the long term and care about them. And part of that is building that relationship with their support network. Sometimes those relationships work better than others. You hope that they're always in alignment, because I think when you see a young person play at their best, that's usually a great sign that the coaches and the support network are in line. And a lot of times when you see that confusion or that uncertainty, it could be a difference in messaging. Someone's telling me this and someone else is telling me that, and I feel like I can't win either way. So we try to do a great job with that. Our assistant coaches are tremendous. Coach Slocum, who will be on tonight, does that as well or better than anybody I've ever met in terms of building real relationships where he tells the truth, and that's what we try to do.
And we'll talk to Coach Slocum about it. As you mentioned, he'll be on with us on the second half of the show. Talk to him about building those relationships. But as you think about the group you've got committed for next year, and it's a big group, it's a young group, and it's a group that's primarily based here in Las Vegas. And again, we're going to talk to Coach Slocum about this, but has recruiting their families or their advisors or whatever kids have today, I don't even know, has that been part of the process?
Yeah, we're not into the advisor deal. So we pretty much, it's the foundation with the family. And I think when young people, unfortunately, everybody doesn't have the same support network or stability. We try to really identify that. The first call we will ask with every recruit is, who's your circle? Who's your support network? Who do you trust? Who do you lean on? Because for every young man, it's going to be a little bit different. It's unfortunate or troubling to me when somebody throws out 15 names when you ask, because then you know that there's going to be 15 opinions when things get hard, and that makes it more challenging. So everybody's not as blessed as somebody else to have maybe a certain foundation or support network, but we try to really, you know, build that in the recruiting process. You build trust over time, and I think you mentioned earlier the challenge of this team is they didn't sign up for me and our coaching staff. They didn't sign up for the work habits and things that have come their way. For some, maybe they wish they wouldn't have. The ones that are coming next year and for our talented recruiting class that we have, they knew what they were signing up for. And then we have had that time to build that trust with their families, to bring them on visits, to get to know them. So I think that our foundation is set and in place. And hopefully when that group comes in, there's that track record of trust that's been built so we can hit the ground running right from the start.
Curtis, when you think about your experience and your friends' experiences, the people you played with, the people you know best, their experiences, not only through recruiting but as they move through their college careers, has it changed dramatically in terms of the impact and all those voices, as Coach said, that can be misaligned and can be giving you, you know, crosstalk and all that? How did you deal with it? How did the people you played with deal with it?
Has it changed? Yes, 100%. I mean, obviously just social media adds a whole other dynamic, because now everybody can have an opinion and these kids go through and read it and they take to heart what some of these people are saying and it can impact them. Luckily, I didn't have to go through that. But like Coach said, it's depend on how that kid relates and what gets them going, what motivates them. For me, I was lucky. My example and who I leaned on was my older brother, Jason. Obviously, now everybody didn't have that. I was lucky. And then mom and dad made sure my butt was in line. And there was even one point, I don't think people know this, there was one point after my freshman year when I wanted to transfer because Coach Kruger recruited another guard to come in. I'm thinking, dang, I just busted my butt all year and I can't even get a chance. My mom said, you made a commitment to be here. You will honor that commitment. And if you don't, you're going to have to tell Coach, you're going to have to deal with that. But you made the choice to be here, so you're going to handle the situation. Obviously, I didn't leave. But again, it's about who's supporting you and behind you and not getting those mixed signals. Because when I was coaching AU ball, you do have coach tells you one thing, high school coach tells you another, your advisor, trainer, whoever. And these kids, they don't know what to do and which way to go. It can be difficult. But I think, like Coach said, you got to get to learn these guys on a personal level. The biggest thing that I loved about Coach Kruger and what he still does when I see him, he always asks about my mom. How is your mom doing? And I'm like, you still remember my mom.
Well, and he means it.
Yeah, but there's multiple people over the course of Thomas and Mac that always ask me that. How is your mom doing? We saw her on, we went on the Canada trip your freshman year, and I'm like, yeah, she's doing great. She'll actually be down here. By the way, she'll be down here in the middle of February if anybody at the Thomas and Mac wants to see my mom when she's in town. But I think it's those things that know, like, a coach really cares about you. It'll make you die for him, and that's what led me to just to bust my butt for Coach Kruger, because he cared for me as a person, and then the basketball stuff, that kind of took care of itself.
And what I find fascinating about the future of this Run and Rebel program is that Coach Otzelberger, and it's been described to me by people who know Coach Kruger very, very well, saying that this is kind of a young Lon Kruger we got here. Now, I will tell you that the fire in Coach Kruger burns very hot, but burns pretty deep. You don't see it very often. Coach Otzelberger tends to be a little bit more fiery, and there's nothing wrong with that, especially with the kids today. But I think, first of all, that's a tremendous compliment. But I also think it bodes incredibly well for this program, because I guarantee you, Curtis, one of the first things you thought about when your mom said that is, uh-oh, I don't want to say that to Coach Kruger and disappoint him.
No.
And I think that's what we're going to see. And, you know, I'm talking as if you aren't here, but I think that's one of the things we are going to see with this Run a Rebel program. We're going to see kids starting next year, and maybe even relationships that are being built with this team, where kids are not going to – their level of loyalty and their level of commitment to coach is going to be the thing that drives them.
Yeah, I didn't want to disappoint Coach Kruger. That was the last thing I wanted to do. I didn't want to let him down. So my junior year, when we were in top 10 in fewest turnovers per game, it was because we just did not want him to walk in that locker room and say, dadgummit, you guys didn't take care of the ball. Because Coach Kruger doesn't curse, but if he does that one time, oh, hell has frozen over. So that might be the one difference between TJ and Coach Kruger. I think he may have a couple few choice words that are a little four-lettered.
You just need to be a little more demonstrative with today's kids. I think that's all it is. But Coach, I mean, is that something that you were able to build with your South Dakota State teams? And is that something that you think as you mature as a coach and as the program matures, that can be kind of an underlying cornerstone of this program?
You mentioned, you know, with Coach Kruger, and again, it's flattering that even have my name mentioned in the same sentence with his, because I hold him in a very high regard. I've been fortunate to have a lot of mentors that have been tremendous people, coaches, and really invest in their players, which I've tried to learn from and implement. I do think that there's a personal connection that allows individuals and teams to play at a higher level, maybe than what their normal ability might be, or it gets them all the way to their ability level, because they know you believe in them, they care about them, and they're invested. We try to make that investment in each of the young people in our program, and then collectively as a group to teach that, you know, that buy-in. We're talking a lot about our team that, you know, the best locker room in the conference is going to be the team, like San Diego State separated themselves from the pack. I don't think that's a secret. But after that, it's still kind of a not sure where everybody is. My belief is whoever will have the most togetherness will be the team that ends up right behind them, and that's what we're striving to do. And to do that, you can talk about it, but it's about that investment of time. And our coaches, I'm really grateful for, because they spend tremendous amounts of time with the young men on our team outside of the practice court, and just it's organic. It's at meals. It's all these other things, and we hope to continue to build that, and I think we have a really good chance to build it even stronger, because with the young men coming in next year, those guys signed up for everything that we have in our program. They know exactly what they're coming into, so do their families, and I think that allows us to really build something special.
That's terrific. Well, we'll hear about more of that when we bring Coach Slocum up here in just a moment, but we want to ask you one more question before we let you go. You got Colorado State on Saturday. This is a team that's playing with a ton of confidence at home, and a team that is really, really skilled offensively. They shoot it incredibly well, high shooting percentage overall, pretty high shooting percentage from threes. They hit 19 threes in one game earlier this year against the Lobos. This is a challenge.
They're a very good basketball team, and their confidence is growing by the day. Even though there's a few young players, I mean, they start two freshmen, a sophomore, in their starting lineup. There are two sophomores and two freshmen, rather, in their starting lineup. So they're a younger club. They're a club that's gaining confidence each and every day. They're probably the only team in the league that has two low post threats that they can throw it into to score, you know, both with Carvacho, who's been a staple in the league for years, and then the freshman David Roddy. He's really emerging, 6'5", but he's 250 pounds, and he's a force. And so they've got that. They're shooting it better, like you mentioned, on the perimeter. Thistlewood is shooting tremendously well from three-point range, mid-40s during the season, and he's just came off a 20-plus point outcome. So they're a group that's playing well, and it showed even last night. They had some stretches. They didn't play as well, but they came back. They were resilient, and they found a way to win the game. And it's going to be a tough challenge in Fort Collins.
No doubt about it. And we did have a question on the Twitter line about the Rams and their outstanding young player Isaiah Stewart. Is he kind of top of the scouting report?
Yeah, he's. I mean, I think their team. If you say what's at the top of the scouting report, it's going to come down to our post defense. They're a team that plays inside out, so whether it's Carvacho or Roddy, that's going to be a huge element for this game and this game plan of making sure we keep the ball out of there, that we don't get into rotation. In transition, I think, you know, with Stevens, he's a guy that can get out and really attack. And, you know, to be a freshman and averaging whatever he's at, 14-ish points a game is impressive. He's been consistent through the year. So it's a team defensive effort. They're a team that has a fairly balanced attack, a lot of guys in double figures. So we've got to just be very intentional. We've got to be the team that plays harder. And we've got to do things defensively and offensively that don't put us at a deficit. We've got to play sound basketball.
Well, that we will see on Saturday up at Fort Collins. Coach, appreciate the wisdom and the words. Go say hi to the kids and get them tucked away. And we'll see you on the way up to Fort Collins tomorrow.
Sounds great. Thanks a lot, guys.
T.J. Otzelberger on his show. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We've got Coach Slocum. DeMarlo will be with us here in just a few minutes. You are listening to the T.J. Otzelberger Show from Bailiwick inside the Orleans Hotel Casino on the UNLV Sports Network from Learfield, IMG College. All right, back here at Bailiwick inside the Orleans Hotel and Casino, John Sandler, Curtis Terry, now joined by Steve Cofield and assistant coach DeMarlo Slocum for the second half of our show. Great to have D here, and Steve, welcome. Thank you. You heard us talking a little bit with Coach and talking about recruiting and the families and all that now goes into that. And he mentioned that you're as good and very involved, as good as anybody, and very involved in that. You've got a great group coming in. A lot of locals coming in. I know that you're very proud of that, being a Las Vegan yourself. But how important is it, not only for the recruiting process, but also the future of that kid in the program, to develop that underlying relationship with family, to make sure everybody's aligned and moving the same direction in terms of what's going to happen with that student athlete?
Oh, it's everything. I think when you enter the process of recruiting, the first thing you have to have engaged and together is the communication piece first, and then obviously you just have to continue to hit that on the head day in, day out to be able to say, you know, once you get a kid on campus, have a voice to where they can trust you and understand that what you're telling them is because you care for them and you want them to do the right things. And when you've built that relationship, I think that comes a little easier down the road.
That relationship and having a strong relationship has to be especially important when things aren't going great. And as Coach talked about with Bryce and talking to his mom and saying all he has to hear is listen to your coach and things will work out. Having that trust with a parent in some ways might be more important than having the trust with the player initially.
Yeah, because sometimes it's like they need to hear – you know, another voice at times, and especially you coming in year one, and they don't, we didn't, like Coach said, we didn't recruit them, right? But at the end of the day, when you put the time in for them to trust you and understand you, there's sometimes you need a phone call to a parent, and that message from the parent needs to be the same as your message. And so when you've built that early relationship and you know the message they're getting, once they call home, and maybe sometimes I've said something or Coach has said something that they necessarily might not want to hear, I think that phone call to a parent and knowing and having the trust that they're going to deliver the same message is highly important.
Curtis, you're smiling about that
one.
Man,
that happened to me freshman year. I took a while to get adjusted to college life and going to class and showing up and staying the whole time. Had not a passing grade in math. And Coach Lou Hill, that's who kind of like oversaw my study hall and like our social stuff that we did and life skill stuff. He called my mom, unbeknownst to me. And then he calls me, come in the office, I need to chat with you. All right, what's up, Coach? He's like, hold on. Picks up the phone, makes a phone call. He's like, hey, Miss Patty, how are you? Oh, I'm good. Yeah, I've got your son right here. And puts it on speakerphone. And she's like, Curtis, I hear you're not going to class. You're doing this. You're doing that. I'm like, Coach, call my mom.
He did you dirty.
Yeah.
She said, you need to clean up your act. Be responsible, or I'm coming down there, and you don't want that. I was like, yep, okay, no more problems. But no, but like that trust. And Coach Hill, again, with Coach Krieger, I mean, with my mom and making sure that I'm okay, like that was the biggest thing for her. Like, make sure my son's okay. Mm-hmm. And that led me to believe, like, I'm going to be okay because they care about me as a person. And that allowed me to really trust in them and to be my best, as opposed to I was like a commodity or just a part of the puzzle. So, yeah, I can relate to that because Coach Hill definitely called my bluff and called my mom.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's huge. And I tell you what, you know, we've you know, for our team, it's breakfast. It's like Coach said, it's lunch, it's dinner. And I think what it showed me, I mean, the last programs I was at, we didn't go about things that way. I mean, we probably had a meal every once in a while together. But what it's done is when you make that phone call to a parent, I think they understand because they talk to their kids, you know, pretty much every night. And you can slowly start to see that the time that you're spending with them, that message from the kid to their parent, is not the same that it was in week two that it is in month two and then month six. It's like they welcome the call. And I think that's been pretty cool to see because I think we've, as a team, put time together to get to understand and know each other.
Yeah, that transformation from, yeah, I don't know about Coach or Coach is kind of a jerk too. Yeah. Coach is okay too. Hey, let me tell you what happened with Coach today. Yeah. That transformation's got to be pretty cool.
Have you been surprised by the buy-in since December 18th, 21st, when you guys hit the reset button? Because that could have gone in multiple directions. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, yes and no. And I say, again, it's all about time. It's all about the commitment you give to these kids once you sit down and meet them for the first time. And you can look them in the eye and tell them a lot of things. But if you don't put the time in, then just like anything else, you're not going to trust the scenario. So, again, we've put the time in, and it's not to pat us on the back. They have done as well, right? They've at 7:15, they're sharp every single morning for breakfast, back for noon at lunch, and 4:30 for dinner. And so when you've put time in, just like anything else, it's no surprise at all. But, again, it's year one, and it's a different time when it comes to student athletes these days. I mean, it's so many things that they're thinking about. They're being pulled and tugged, and I'm sure it's four or five guys on our team that still didn't know whether they should have transferred or not, right? And so, that side of it, I'm you know, a couple guys. Yeah, I'm a little shocked that they've come around so smoothly, but overly excited that they have, and it's been a joy to coach them.
Three meals a day they get.
What's that?
Three meals a day?
Three meals a day.
Wait.
A little different than what we had,
yeah.
Right?
We maybe got a training table two, three times a week.
Hey, Curtis,
4:30 dinner, see your future.
I'm cool with that. Three meals a day sounds awesome.
Yeah. How important, how big is it? We didn't get to this with Coach, but I know you are fully aware of this. How big is it having Eli back and available? We saw it against San Diego State. Whether it's his and it was just his first game back, but whether it's his experience, his savvy, the fact that he brings a little bit of a different way of playing, his shooting, what have you, getting to the rim than Marvin, How important is it having him back?
Well, you know, you look at a team like San Diego State, right, and you'll say, okay, a lot of people look at him and say, well, is that really the number four team in the country? Well, probably from a talent standpoint, it's not. However, their experience is everything to that team. And so with Eli, that's what he brings. He gives us experience. He's been coached at the highest level. He's been coached at the lowest level. And so he's seen the ups and he's seen the downs. We've got a lot of student-athletes on our team that hadn't been in that, had that experience. And so more than anything, Eli brings us a presence of experience that I just think it's no substitution for it.
I'm glad you mentioned San Diego State. And I wonder how often you reference other teams and, you know, the result or how they look. Because just watching that backcourt, I think that is one of the model situations that you can point out to kids. Hey, this is the way it's supposed to be. You know, Malachi Flynn goes in there. He's an elite scorer. He's still an elite scorer. K.J. Fagan, from game to game, provides a different role, and you don't see any ego. Like, he's a defensive stopper against you guys, and then yesterday against New Mexico, he's blistering from three. It's just, it's one of those situations you can hold up to your kids and go, hey, these guys get it. This is the way it's supposed to be.
That's right, and that's never an easy dynamic to mold together. And credit to San Diego State for doing it, because, again, I know there's a lot of guys and a lot of programs across the country that try the grad school route. Yeah, we were one of, we had to take a couple guys late, and it doesn't always work out, you know, because a lot of kids come in and this is their last chance, and so their mentality of being the last chance, there's no telling what you're going to get from them. San Diego State has done a really good job, but again, moving back to Eli, that's what he brings to us, and I think it's experience that sometimes I can see with our team we lack, and we're glad to have him back.
It is terrific. It'll be fun to watch him for the rest of the year. Knock on wood, he stays healthy.
Yeah.
Take a break, come back. More with DeMarlo Slocum, Runner Rebel Basketball. We'll have a conversation, continue to talk about the upcoming games and get DeMarlo's assessment of where the team is now, where the program is, as we are at the halfway point of the conference season. You're listening to the Runner Rebel Coaches Show from Bailiwick inside the Orleans Hotel Casino on the UNLV Sports Network from Learfield, IMG College. Inside the Orleans Hotel and Casino, the Runner Rebel Coaches Show, John Sandler, Curtis Terry, Steve Cofield, and assistant coach DeMarlo Slocum finishing things up as the Runner Rebels get ready for Colorado State on Saturday. We'll be on the air at 1 o'clock Las Vegas time with the tip, 12:30 Runner Rebel warm-up. Then the Rebels on the road back-to-back as we'll be up in Logan on Wednesday against Utah State, and we don't even want to talk about that because those guys have figured it out. But it's going to be a tough one up in Fort Collins. You're very familiar with it, Coach. Know that place very well. You worked there for a number of years, and that's a confident Colorado State team, especially on offense, that the Rebels are going to face.
Yep, they're playing well. Nico has done a really good job getting the right personnel for the system that he's trying to implement, and the kids are bought in. They're really well coached defensively, take the right shots on the offensive end, and then if you don't get back and guard them in transition, they'll sting you there. So hostile environment, they've done a good job getting fans in the stands, and so again, we're just, yeah, excited about the opportunity. Obviously, if you guys have paid, I'm sure you're paying attention to the league, it's pretty close, and I think it's an important game for both teams. But for us, our focus is to try to do something that this league hadn't done thus far, is try to get a road win against a quality team.
Right.
And so that's been our focus, but I know it's going to be a challenge. Our guys understand that, and we're looking forward to it.
Who's the David Roddy kid? Because now you're going to face a team where you have to defend the five and the four.
Yeah. You said who's going to guard him?
No, I'm just saying in general. What do you think of David Roddy at 6'5 and 240 pounds out of Minnesota?
Nope, physical. Doesn't know he's a freshman. Right, you know, that's what makes him so good, because if you watched him, you would obviously, with his body and his stature, you wouldn't think he's a freshman, but his mentality doesn't allow him to think that way as well. And so, but again, that's why they're playing well right now. They've got a couple young kids that have that same mentality, but him in particular, he's physical. You can throw it to him on the block. And then I think his biggest ad, he's really defensively, I think he's a little underrated. If you catch it around the basket, you better be pretty crafty. Because he's a great wall-up guy that understands angles, and he moves his feet, and he's strong enough to make you, to bump you off your block.
And Carvacho is interesting to defend because he throws up a lot of unorthodox stuff. you know, kind of mid-range hooks. I know it's a strange term.
But it goes in, and with both hands.
He'll throw up, and that's the thing. He can throw it up with both hands, and he'll throw up a hook from 8-9 feet.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's what we just talked about with you know, a lot of people I've heard to say, hey, he hadn't had the year that people expected. Hey, at the end of the day, he's got experience, right? And anytime you have experience, this game that will happen Saturday, he's been through multiple. Right, and so whenever you can have an anchor of that sort, I think that's what gives those freshmen so much confidence, because he's a guy, regardless of whether he's playing well or not, he has the message in the locker room to take when you've lost two consecutive games. He's been there, he's done that. He can get those freshmen and give them the mentality to go into that third game and have a chance to win.
Curtis, you got some fond memories up there.
Oh yeah, we had some good times over there at Moby Arena. Like I just said during the break, the house that Becky Hammon built.
There you go.
I think it's a great atmosphere up there. I think it's a great for me. It was always a great shooter's gym. It was always snowing when I was there, so not my favorite thing. But they always had tough competitive teams.
Absolutely.
And like you mentioned with Caravaggio, I mean, experience. I think that's, it's underrated. It's undervalued. But I think that's the biggest piece for me, that having Eli back now, is that experience. Just his presence, that he's out there and take a deep breath, guys, or let's slow it down. It's understated, but that's the stuff that really makes a difference, as opposed to trying to press so hard and do so much. Just slow down. We've been here before. This is how we're going to get through it. We don't need it all in one strike or all in one shot.
That's right.
Coach, real quick, you got a chance to see the Thomas and Mack as it's going to be, as it was, as it's going to be against San Diego State. Did that get you excited?
It brought chills, but I can only think about leaving my high school games and running over to Thomas and Mack and getting ready. It was unbelievable to hear Rebels. I hadn't heard it. But again, it was one of those things where I'm like, yep, if we can get this place back to that, that's what makes it special. And it just drives you and motivates you to do it, to have it happen faster than what you originally anticipated.
Well, it's going to happen, and it's just a matter of when, not if. Yep. That's going to do it for us, reminding you that Rebels against Colorado State Saturday afternoon will be on the air at 1 o'clock with on the air at 12:30, Runner Up warm-up, and the tip at 1. That's going to do it for us tonight. Thanks to everybody who came out. Thanks to Coach and Coach. Thanks to Jared back in our studios, Triv Engineering, for Steve, for Curtis, for Coach DeMarlo Slocum. This is John saying thanks for listening. We'll talk to you Saturday from CSU. Have a great night, everybody.
Live from Bailiwick, inside the Orleans Hotel and Casino, you've been listening to the Runnin' Rebels Basketball Coaches Show, brought to you by State Farm. Go with the one that's here to help life go right. Talk to an agent today at 800-STATE-FARM. And by Chevron. It's proven. No gasoline gets better mileage than Chevron with Techron. Care for your car. The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Rebel Sports Network.
Tune in to Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff for the most in-depth coverage of the Runnin' Rebels in town. Weekday mornings at 10 on ESPN Las Vegas.
KWWN Las Vegas.